This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Did he hit Austin? My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Just want to do things my own way, you know.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Hello! It is I, P2, Phil Pritchett here, sitting atop my perch here in Fort Worth, Texas, gazing around the room at the guitars and amps and drums that beckon artistic greatness from not only me, but from you, the songwriter, the band who seeks to record. Call me, 817-733-5256. Shoot me an email, phil@philpritchett.com. I'll mix your tracks, master, and of course do full albums. Come on up here to the studio, record. Your new direction awaits. How you doing, everybody? What a week we've had in full band land. Well, it is the day, a few days after our part two of our live recording down in Corpus Christi, Texas. Oh, yes, you know of what I speak. The Executive Surf Club Saturday night was a Twitter with excitement as the full band descended upon Corpus Christi, Texas to record round two of a live recording effort previously unseen in the Texas music market. That may be piling on just a little bit there. Of course, we were down there in August. We recorded one night on a hot August night. Oh, man. You know, that's the old Neil Diamond live record. Hot August night. Hey! So we did that in August. We did the hot August night in August. Got a few good things there, but had some technical glitches. Excessive sweating. It was about 110 degrees on the stage. Tuning was an issue. Some other things we were trying to really fight through. And some of the recording, there were actual glitches in the hard drive and that kind of things. But we got a few things. I played some of the tracks for you, I believe. We already mixed a few tracks from it. Bullfighter and All I Want to Do, a couple of things. We played on the podcast here exclusively a few weeks back. So, you know, things are moving along on that front very well. But we needed some more shots at some of these tunes, man. So there we were, Saturday night on stage in Corpus. Man, much cooler, a beautiful night, about 75 degrees, breezy. So we had we're able to have a great show. Thanks to all of y'all for coming out, yelling and screaming to be on the live record. We appreciate it so much. A lot of you guys drove in from out of town. Heard a lot of stories from people coming in from Austin and Houston and San Antonio and people driving in. Really appreciate it. It means a lot that you guys hit the road and travel like you do. It's kind of like a good football, college football team. Phil Perch and the full band travels well. We travel well, you know. So thrilled to see everybody out there. Oh, what other tidbits do we have from that night? What other tidbits? Man, we did well. You know, with this live record effort, we're trying to lean a little more heavily on some of the newer stuff. I was telling somebody the other day that, man, you know, like our song Colorado on Trial. And let me see. I got the album right here. We did that Cool and Unusual Punishment album. We put Colorado on Trial. You know, Willin', Time Equals Distance, Tougher Than the Rest, Bruising Sheetrock. Man, Bruising Sheetrock especially. By including those songs on this live record, it kind of reintroduces the songs to people in a way, if it's done well on a live record. You know, I mean, Bruising Sheetrock was like the second to last song on Suburban Legends, you know, record I did in 1998, my Nashville rock and roll record. Colorado on Trial was on that. But anyway, it was a little bit, I would say, sort of buried on that album as a 12-song record, Suburban Legends. Yeah, so Sheetrock just kind of languished. I mean, it got some attention. Some people dug it out. Hey, man, that's a cool song, kind of at the end of that album there. But it wasn't until we put it on the Cool and Unusual Punishment live album that it really gained a lot of traction for us, you know, at the live shows, and kind of became a fan favorite. So it's good to do these live records occasionally. And, yeah, you want to do the songs everybody wants to hear, but I always like to kind of reach back and maybe find a song or two I feel like, you know, we never played a whole lot or never got maybe the attention it so richly deserved, and put it in a prominent place on a live record, and you know, see if people kind of attach to it a little easier second time around. So who knows? We you know, we did some different kind of stuff live, but you know, a lot of stuff pulling from the Bullfighter Returns album, High Tide in the Heartland, and Mark of the Human Hand. So a lot of stuff on there probably make it onto the record, and you know, we got the old songs. We'll include some of those as well. And I don't know. There's some scenario where we might just put the whole damn show on there. I don't know. You know, I was talking to, you know, some of these, like this Cool and Unusual, on the other live records, you got a two-hour show. You're kind of trying to edit it down to a 12, 14 songs. Why, Phil? Why would you do that? Well, remember CDs? Everybody remember CDs? They only hold about 75 minutes of music. So unless you want to, you know, blow up the budget and have a double disc pack and all that, you're kind of like, well, you know, we got to have it, you know, within 75 minutes, and we don't want to go too long and all this kind of thing. But these days, everybody's like, man, when's the CD coming out, Phil? When's the Corpus Christi Live CD coming out? And I just looked him right in the eye, and I said, in all honesty, man, I don't know. Meaning, I don't even know if it's going to be on CD. So if it's just, you know, we put it on the website like we do for $4 at p2tunes.com, or and, of course, iTunes and Amazon everywhere else. I don't know. Part of me says, well, man, why don't we just put all, whatever it was, 20 songs, or I don't know how many songs we played that night, 22 or something like that. You might as well just have them all on there for, I don't know. Can't the world use another version of me playing Maria and Luke Skywalker? Well, yeah, I mean, doesn't that, just going to round it out? But you got to start labeling these things accordingly. You know, when you start having so many versions, you can't just have Tougher Than the Rest. You're like, man, is that the album? Is that the first live album or what? So I don't know. This will be Maria 2011 in Corpus or something like that, you know. I see it on these bands' websites. You know, you kind of got to distinguish between the different versions so people know what they're listening to or what they're downloading or listening to on Spotify, etc. Oh, man. Man, did I tell you about the exciting news? I've been tipped off to it, of course. I've been hearing so much about Spotify recently. Spotify. Joe's listening to Spotify. This on Facebook. Heard great things about it. Let me tell you what, man. It's the most exciting thing in my world to happen to listening to music, in the listening to music realm. The most exciting thing to happen since the advent of the iPod has been Spotify. Man, I have been in heaven since I've downloaded Spotify. You can get it for free, or you can pay $9.99 a month for the you know, executive package or whatever, so you can have Spotify on your phone and take it anywhere you go. But I've got a roving laptop in the house, you know, Wi-Fi in the house, so I can plug it into my stereo or just sit there and listen to it. And, man, I've just been dialing up freaking the craziest things, you know, just going through. And, oh, man, just the kids in there listening to Christmas music and stuff. I've had the same Elvis Christmas album, you know, forever that we listen to while we're decorating the tree or something. It's 8 songs, you know. Kids are like, Dad, do we always have to listen to the same album? Like, it's the only Christmas album I got. But now, with Spotify, the world is open. Man, just Bing Crosby, Johnny Mathis, whoever. I don't know. I might venture into Harry Connick Jr. at some point. Oh, look out! No, you didn't hear me say that. But, you know, you've got your choice. You've got everything out there. It's amazing. A little commercial pops up every now and then and says, you're listening to Spotify. Thanks for listening. Consider upgrading to the $9.99 package or something. So no commercials, really. I mean, occasionally there's a little blurb comes in there. But otherwise, man, you just dial up records. There's all kinds of ways you can do playlists and shuffles and all kinds of fun stuff. Very fun. So check out Spotify, man. It is exciting. Man, I've had all my songs on my iPod. I had a computer crash, so I can't sync up my iPod with a new computer without losing what's on the iPod. I've kind of been frozen in music world, you know. The one thing that kind of stinks about it is I've converted so much vinyl to my iTunes. I mean, I still got the files for those, all my vinyl conversions. But when I listen to those records on Spotify, you don't get the sizzle and the crack and the pops from the vinyl that I recorded onto there. So, frankly, I don't know if I care. That's the scary thing. I don't know if I care. It's so convenient. Again, how many times we talk about that when it comes to listening to music, people, including hardened gearhead musicians like me, old analog guys, we're going to protest MP3s. We're going to poo-poo plugins and digital recordings and listening to stuff on iTunes and all that kind of thing and Spotify. Oh, it's just streaming. But you know what, man? Convenience wins out when it comes to listening to music. I just find myself, you know, listening to my iPod and just enjoying it. You know, I mean, I love throwing on a record too, but you got to keep the needle, you know, up to speed and your records and everything. And then the side's done. After like 18 minutes, you got to flip it over, all that kind of stuff. I love it. I love the experience. But let me tell you, man, the listening experience on Spotify is really, really cool. I've just been exploring and, you know, revisiting things. The fun thing is just going back to like, man, what was that album I had in like eighth grade? And, you know, that tape, I knew every word to it, you know, and now I don't have it. And just finding it, listening to it, and just remembering all the songs. And, gosh, just been a blast. Spotify, check it out. It's free. Of course, yours truly, Phil Pritchett's all over that thing. And the big thing on Spotify is the artists get paid. It's free to download and use on your computer. You're thinking, well, how are the artists getting paid? They get paid per stream. Like when you listen to one of my songs, just bask in the knowledge that Phil Pritchett is getting 0.0001 cent from that listen. Thank you. We love you. You're adding to my pages and pages of digital list of all these streams I get on Spotify. It's hilarious to sit there and look at them on my digital royalty statement. But rest assured, I'm getting paid, so play it. It's funny, my most popular plays are all the cover songs. You know, it occurs to me that people are probably searching for, you know, Idiot Wind and Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, these obscure cover songs that I've recorded. But if you think about it, those are famous songs, and so if people search those famous tunes, they're going to come across my name and play it. So it's weird because my most popular plays are, you know, some of those cover tunes are up there. Willin', of course, and some stuff like that. So anyway, explore. Spotify, Phil Pritchett's on there. Well, man, we have had some big, you know, whenever some big college football news goes down, oh, this show's all over the map, isn't it? Music, Spotify, live recording, jumping right on to college football. We love talking some college football, especially when it deals with the biggest show-your-ass Aggie fan in the world, our beloved Blake Walker, my old road manager. The firing of Mike Sherman, the football coach at Texas A&M University, has come down. He is distraught. We ran right to the phones. Called Walker, the authority. He's going to come in here and tell us what is going on at Texas A&M with the coaching situation. They're going to the SEC next year. Oh, his world has been blown up. He needs counseling. He needs a friend, and he needs to talk about it. And you'll hear it all in our next segment. Blake Walker, next.
Make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down. I have a rich understanding of my finest defenses. I proclaim that claims are left unstated. I demand a rematch. Yes, I decree a stalemate.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here with you on the P2 Podcast from Trinidad World Recording Studios. Oh, book the full band. The holidays are upon us. Call me, 817-733-5256. I'll come play solo in your backyard with an acoustic guitar. Or heck, man, we'll get the full band down there to rock it out. We love doing the private party for the fans. That's what we live for. Call me or email me, phil@philpritchett.com. We are here to serve you, the fan, the Texas Music Pritchett devotee. Well, good grief, a dark cloud has hung over the podcast here. You know what? I talked to my friend, the frequent podcast contributor, Blake Walker, about coming to join us. We had a lot to catch up on. He agreed to come in today. And whoa, lo and behold, from out of nowhere, Mike Sherman, the beloved Aggie legend.
I don't know about
legend. I'm looking for your reaction on that term.
I don't know about legend.
To always talk some Texas Aggie football, our overzealous Aggie. Oh, I get so many great emails whenever Blake Walker joins us going, I love hearing him show his Aggie ass on your show. Man, Mike Sherman has been fired. So immediately we just ran to the phones, called in the authorities, called in the expert. And yes, Blake Walker, the podcast's own Blake Walker, is here with a heavy heart. I don't know if is your mood darkened or are you enlivened by the news of Mike Sherman, the football coach's firing after 4 years?
Oh, man, it's a little bit of both. Yeah. It is depressing. 9 years after the great R.C. Slocum, here we are. We've gone 5 with Fran, the Frantanic. It was awful.
Dennis Franchione replacing R.C. Slocum. When the Aggies got tired of R.C. Slocum going sparing everybody, going 9-3.
With 10-win seasons.
8-4. You know, I mean, you're winning. Just yes. A man, we can't get over the next level. We're not OU. We haven't beaten Texas or gotten past, you know, to that undefeated year. So Slocum is pushed aside for the hot guy, Dennis Franchione out of TCU.
Yes, we got Dennis. He was there 5 years. Good Lord. We went backwards.
Well, about y'all about 500, right? I don't know, five.
Yeah, he was
28 and 26 or something like that.
27 and 23 overall.
Okay.
But a lot of his wins are against total chump teams.
Well, all the Big 12 teams kind of play those New Mexico states.
And yes. Oh, my
ooh
Lord.
Ooh la la early in the year. Well, so we bring in Mike Sherman, Green Bay Packers ex-coach.
He was an ex-Aggie offensive lineman coach for R.C.
Slocum.
And a great
offensive mind.
And let me say this. I love Sherman as a man.
Don't get me
as
wrong.
A man,
we
as
love
a person,
the guy. Don't
okay?
get me wrong.
I go to all the – every year I go to the A&M club deal and listen to the coach talk. And, you know, there's never anyone that
– always a class act, not a creepy, weird guy.
Yeah.
Or just a
– R.C.
Whereas Fran, much did not rub a lot of people the right way. Very distant, standoffish, didn't play golf with the guys and kind of stuff. And
watching Fran at those things, and even RC, they were real boring, and they just really didn't know how to cater to the crowd. Yeah, and you know, guys like Jackie Sherrill would light the room up, and he'd come in there, and
a lot of charisma.
Super fun to watch. Yeah. And Sherman was dry, but had a really good sense of humor, and was a great guy, and really bought into all the Aggie traditions.
Yeah.
A lot like, you know, RC and Cheryl, that's what we want. We want a coach that appreciates A&M, doesn't want to go anywhere else, wants to make us a powerhouse, doesn't want to make his name and jump somewhere else. And Sherman was that way. He loved the
upholds
tradition.
The tradition and then progresses to a new era of excellence.
Yes, and that did not work out at all.
I remember when they hired Sherman, I was a little surprised. I think we talked then. I was kind of like, man, I thought they'd just kind of go with a young guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was maybe a stretch to say, like, you know, Datwin or something, but just someone who's kind of in recent Aggie memory of greatness. Just go, man, let's just get a young guy in there who's going to fire people up. So Sherman, who's certainly an accomplished coach, it was a little bit like, gosh, he's kind of older. Can he go out and recruit the young guys? He did well in recruiting.
He just couldn't win games that mattered. He had one good season last year. He went 9-3. And after Gerard Johnson got benched, they brought out Tannehill. Gerard had shoulder surgery, and so he just never came back the same. Tannehill went in after the third loss. They lost three in a row. Oklahoma State, Arkansas, Missouri. And then here comes Tannehill. We win every single game for the rest of that season besides our bowl game. And it looked like, man, the sky was the limit.
Right. Next year, returning all 18 starters or something, whatever it was.
The only guy we lost that was huge was Von Miller. Von Miller was gone from the defense, and that turned out to be a lot bigger than we thought. But we also had a new defensive coordinator in last year, Tim DeRuiter from Air Force. Things were looking good, turned our defense around. We beat 8 guys in a row. Oklahoma and Nebraska were part of that.
Right.
And so it was a big deal. And so Sherman looked like he's going to make this happen. And his recruiting –
after all these years, he's got his guys in place.
Yeah, this was his last – this was his fourth year. His freshman to senior group.
All of his guys.
And so this was it. And on some of the Fran guys are still there, but not enough to make a difference. You know, it was Sherman's year. And
preseason polls had it
number
Aggies
eight,
ranked number eight. Top 10.
Oh, and he just choked in every ranked opponent. Led OSU by 18 at half at home. Choked it away. And we just did it. We did it the next week to Arkansas, and it just got worse. We lost to K-State. We lost to Missouri.
Kind of lost their confidence.
Oh.
It, you know.
And it was –
had a lead against Texas and saw it go away.
Gave that game away.
Yeah.
Just awful. And that was the thing. Sherman could never motivate the guys in the third and fourth quarter. He never changed his playbook, ran that same offense. I hadn't seen a screen pass in 4 years. The guy ran the same comeback route to Fuller every third down.
Right.
I mean, there just wasn't a lot of variation or changing the playbook when things went wrong. There's no motivation in the third and fourth quarter. I mean, I got on that ShermTracker.com. If you want to see an alarming website.
The ShermTracker. It compares the tenure of Dennis Franchione with the tenure of Mike Sherman. And for a while there, the Sherman's second or third year, it seemed like things were
turning around.
Yeah. But you kind of go back to the record, and it was pretty much a carbon copy of the Fran years.
Oh, my gosh.
Just still some huge embarrassing losses. You know, it just compares the two. It's like, man, it's just very similar. Kind of 500, not really beating any ranked opponents. Maybe one, like 1-12 or something, whatever they were.
Oh, my gosh. It was so alarming. Against top 25 teams in Sherman's 4 years, he's 4-13.
Yeah, wow.
He ended up 25-25 in 4 years.
Just even Steven.
He was 4-5 this year in conference play. In the 4 years, his third quarter percentage, he got outscored 76-7 in the third quarter. That's his average. I mean, that's all the points added up. I mean, the guy just fell on his face so bad this year. He was 0-5 versus all SEC teams.
Uh-huh.
0-5 in 4 years versus the SEC. And here we go.
Yeah.
We're going to the SEC.
Going to the SEC.
Awesome.
Look out. Here we go.
You know,
well, something else I found alarming was I think just initially, and this is kind of my point of view on it, because I saw when Fran came in and I saw when Sherman, the first year was rocky. Everyone goes, man, you got to give him time. And, man, you kind of look at recent college football history. You know, Stoops gets to OU, Matt gets to Texas, Les Miles gets to LSU. Even that first year, there's a new attitude. They do a little better than expected. They don't go 4-8 and kind of go, we got to wait till their kids get in there. No, they kind of go in there and they win with the guys they got. They're able to get the guys to play hard, to buy into what they're doing, and now they might not go 10-2, but they're going to say, hey, you know, the new coach came in, we went 8-4, you know, we thought we'd be 500 with the new, but hey, there seems to be some kind of turnaround, and I feel like in the tenure of Fran and Sherman, the first year was really bad on both of those guys, and just kind of never got out of the mud. The second year it was just kind of like, well, maybe we can get it going this year. But, man, that sets you back. Your recruiting's going to take a hit. Like, his first year, there's nothing turned around. And it seems like those programs that seem like they do have a coach and have had, those guys kind of came in and made a difference off the bat.
I would argue the difference in those schools is winning tradition and usually recruiting the top 10. Texas, OU, and LSU are usually all in the top 10 in recruiting. If you take a guy out and put a guy in, they have a lot more to work with. An Aggie coach is coming into a team that does not recruit in the top 10 traditionally,
That's right.
That has to fight for scraps and has to try and make his team he's got to out-coach him and motivate him to beat better teams to eventually get the recruits he needs. And we haven't had a guy that's been able to do that since RC. And then RC's kind of final years – my argument there is why he needed to go is he had his big dance in 98. He went to the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
He played Ohio State. It was his big moment. If he beats Ohio State, we're pre-ranked 1 or 2 the very next year.
Right.
And we have a great shot at a national championship. Ohio State was not number one that year, but a lot of people argued them as number two. They're a great team. We played them in New Orleans, and we got killed.
Yeah.
And the very next year, we played Penn State and got killed.
Right.
And those were RC's big moments to show what A&M was made of
on
nationally.
On a national stage. To that end, I noticed looking up on someone brought up, and I looked back, going back to 1991, and this was shocking. Back to 91, since 1991, A&M's played in like 14 bowl games. And the record of A&M
is bad.
2-12.
It's bad.
And man, some of the ones recent are like, you know, 45-10 to LSU and Tennessee, and they're just like, man, not just like losing on a last second field goal, just getting pounded.
The last
on a national stage. Oof. That has to hurt your recruit. I mean, like you say, it'd be a big momentum boost to say, man, they went right in there and whipped up on LSU in the, you know, and a couple of those victories, man. One was like in 1990. Or when you beat Michigan, remember that game? That was 22-20, Michigan in the Alamo Bowl.
Brian Greasy, Bob Greasy's kid.
Back in 97 or whenever that was.
Bianca Matuca was on that team.
That was a win. That was a great win. And then there was, y'all beat TCU and some other bowl.
Yay, the Houston Furniture Bowl.
Yeah. Gallerfurniture.com. Yeah, gallerfurniture.com bowl.
And I don't put a lot of stock into TCU, but I mean, I do in their coach, who they play. And that year was the same thing. We killed them.
Well, it's a tough situation because people do say, man, he's an ex-assistant coach. We're going to get this ex-assistant. But as the Jackie Sherrill and now the R.C. Slocum years get further in the rearview mirror, former assistant, when was he here? It's kind of like, how far back? It's almost like, do we just go get a guy? And the Aggies always want to hire from within some guy that knows the program.
Yeah.
But there starts to be not a lot of stuff maybe in the last, you know, 10 or 20 years that you're like, wait a minute, you know, when was he here and what was he doing? You know?
They got real gun shy. They went and got Fran, who was the sexy, expensive
outsider.
Who was actually at Alabama when we got him.
A lot of people forget. Yeah, yeah, he was there for a year or two.
He left TCU, went to Alabama. There was a bunch of recruiting violations before he got there.
Controversy.
He didn't know about all that, so he bounced on Alabama, came to us. That was the expensive, sexy hire, and he fell on his face. I mean, he was bad, and we kept him around for 5 years, even gave him an extension in between some of that, and we kept him around I think it was five, and he was awful, and so that kind of scared us. Well, then we go to Sherman, who hadn't been on a college sideline in 8 years, had been in the pros, knew our system, was a big Aggie fan, but he was the wrong hire. And Bill Byrne is to blame there. Everything else he's touched has been gold except for that one hire, that Sherman hire. And so, you know, that was a mistake. And that set us back even further. And here we are going into the SEC, and who are you going to get?
Well, that's kind of the big question. I mean, and there's some talk about –
I've heard several rumors.
The Houston guy, but they're saying he might be going to Arizona State. That he already kind of had a deal there. But I don't know who's out there. Who's out there? You're talking about just getting the D coordinator at Alabama, which you never know. But
yeah, you don't know how that's going to turn out.
They're unknown. Right. It's not like hiring Urban Meyer. Like,
I'll tell you two guys that, and most people would probably disagree with me. But if I could have my pick, I'd take Gary Patterson. If I could talk him out of TCU, I'd take him in a heartbeat.
Oh, well, yeah. He's a great coach.
I don't think you're going to talk. Now he's going to the Big 12 with TCU. Here it is. You know, his big stage.
He's making $2-3 million a year. I mean, what would you have to pay a guy like that?
We paid Sherman. Sherman, before he left, how much do you think he made?
A year. Golly. I don't know, $2-3 million?
2.2. You know what we got to pay him on his way out?
I don't know. What?
5.4. Do you know that we're still paying R.C. Slocum and Dennis Franchione?
Well, yeah. Is that right?
Both. Still getting paid.
Millions.
Did not. Well, now, Fran might have gotten a buyout. Right. I haven't heard about that one. But I know we were still paying him years after he had gone. R.C. Slocum was still on staff. They made him like an athletic assistant.
For his $3 million buyout.
And they just kept paying it out. And so here we are now. I mean, if you're going to offer 2.2. You need to go get Jim Tressel from Ohio State. I mean, go get the biggest, craziest name you can.
Yeah, that's
you
right. Know? I mean, we're talking about Patterson at TCU. I don't think he makes more than $2 million. I don't think.
He might not, but
right
I know.
Around, I mean, yeah. I don't know. If y'all offer him three, I don't know if it'd be worth it for that. But
I'd love to take him because he's a proven – he's a great coach. Mm-hmm. He always out-coaches better talent. He's a good recruiter.
That's right. His guys aren't as big and – fast traditionally as maybe some of the guys he beats. You're kind of like, man, he's got a good scheme. He's got guys hustling and buying in.
If you look at Rivals.com, he's not the greatest recruiter, but he takes those kids that are three-star and two-star, and he gets them playing in his system and uses them his way, and he makes it with the kids he has, and that's what we need is a guy that can't recruit all the five-star talent in the world but can coach those three-star and four-star guys into upsetting better teams. And that's why I'd love to have him, but they're talking about the Houston guy. They're talking about the defense coordinator for Alabama. I haven't heard too many other rumors besides those two. I know Jim Tressel's out there from Ohio State. I don't think he can recruit in Texas.
Yeah.
But he's just a big, sexy name. He's won a national championship.
That's right.
I would love the Boise State coach.
Mm-hmm.
That guy seems to have always an incredible offense, a decent quarterback. I mean, why not?
Wins with talent that, you know, he's got a good scheme.
How do you know who to get? I mean, we've screwed the pooch twice. I don't have a say in it. I don't know. I mean,
well, to that end, we're going to invite Blake Walker back next week for some more Aggie football head coaching talk and how this whole SEC thing's going to work out. They're moving off to the SEC pretty soon. His girls volleyball team's going to be leaving on a bus from College Station to drive to Athens, Georgia for a doubleheader.
Whoop.
How's that? I don't know. How's this whole thing going to work? And football, of course, king among all. We'll talk more about that with Blake Walker next week. Thanks for dropping by this week, Walker, and for sharing all your views on all things Texas Aggie football. A lot of Aggie fans listen to the podcast out there. We hope you're shedding a little light out there for you on what's going on. Well, that is our show for this week, folks. Phil Pritchett and the full band is ready to play your private party. 817-733-5256 or email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Hey, go to iTunes and pick up that new Pritchett and Rodney Parker REM tribute EP. It's all the rage, man. It sounds great. Getting a lot of great feedback from folks on there. Thanks for letting me know what you think of it. Check it out. We'll see you next week. Much tougher.
And let my machine talk to me. Let my machine talk to me. This is my world, and I am world leader. Pretend this is my life, and this is my time. I have been given the freedom to do as I see fit, and it's high.